Welcome to Biz Rocket Radio with Stone Payton and John Baker. John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. And now, get ready for Biz Rocket Radio. Here's Stone Payton and John Baker.
Welcome to Biz Rocket Radio. This is John Baker with my partner, Stone. How you doing, Stone?
I'm doing good, man. I've been looking forward to this show. Did we do one last week?
No, man. We had to skip it.
Last week was snowy.
Yeah. The 3 inches of closed school down for 5 days.
So did y'all go stir crazy at your place?
Well, you know, we had the first day was a lot of fun. You had the snow and a little bit of ice and some sledding. And that was kind of cool. And then the second day, I was like, I'm going to the office. And it wasn't too bad. It kind of slushy and a little slippery.
You went in?
No, I went in. Second
you're
day,
one
no
of
problem.
Those guys that we see on the news. You don't listen
fun.
To the people?
No, it was fun. It was great. No problem. I'm a northern guy. I grew up in Maryland. Not a lot of snow up there, but lots of ice and nastiness. So I got in, no problem. Got home, 5 hours of work, came back home. Wednesday, I tried to do it again. And as I'm pulling out of my driveway, my sister-in-law comes in and says, there's someone stuck going up a hill, whatever. And I was like, I'll see what happens. And I go out there, and sure enough, there's someone stuck going up a hill. And I'm like, well, I can't go that way. I'll go this way. I'll just go around. No, Holcomb Bridge is, like, closed down. Helicopters overhead, you know, three helicopters. Like, look at the idiots out here. And so I parked the car, walked home, and went and got the car later.
But,
so,
I mean, even a Yankee can't drive on ice, right? I mean, nobody can drive on ice. Right?
Wednesday was really bad. I gotta give credit to even the people that were scared to drive on Wednesday because it was not good. I was out there going, yeah, this is not good. There's like no salt. There's no sand. There's no plows.
Well, you know, and they jumped all over the guys for not having the equipment. But why would you invest in that equipment? You only need it every 10 or 12 years.
True.
I mean, so I mean, I understand people are frustrated, but I was happy to stay home, drink hot chocolate, catch up on my reading, do some internet stuff.
Yeah. So this is our extension of the snow day. This is our own snow makeup.
This is
day.
Our new snow day. Yeah. Okay. Cool.
So I'm excited about today. We've got three great guests, and just to go over quickly, Biz Rocket Radio is a show that we dedicate towards working with executives and business owners and learning about the challenges that they've had and the successes that they've had. And sharing that with our audience and learning more about what these great people are doing. Today we've got Bernadette Bowes, and we've got Ryan Curry, and we've got Bill Williams. So
full house.
Full house.
Yeah.
Well, you might need to help me out a little bit with this one.
I'm here, man.
All right, good. Well, we're going to start with Bernadette, and Bernadette is live and on the air. Bernadette, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
I can tell. I love your outfit. It rocks.
Well, thanks. Yes, I'm awfully bright and glittery on it.
You're bright. Every time I see you, you're
and it's
bright.
The radio, not the television.
That's good stuff. So, yeah. Bernadette, tell us a little bit about your background and kind of how you came to us.
Oh, boy. How much time do we have? I come from predominantly a corporate background. For about 25 years, I was in retail and then went into the technology industry, consulting in retail. And then pretty much headed up global professional services organizations for a number of years. Before, you know, I got the big pink slip, is it? Green slip?
Pink is pink.
Pink slip, I think.
But the difference between my pink slip and green slip is they didn't even get two words out, and I was like packing up my things and saying, thank you so much. Have a great day. And walking out.
Yeah.
And that kind of spearheaded into a book that I wrote, which then spearheaded into a publishing company I'm developing and brought me here, you know, eventually. I mean, that's a compression of the last pretty much year and a half.
So as a corporate executive, that transition, how did it go? I mean, we work with a lot of executives going through transition, and we get a lot of different experiences. What was it like for you?
Well, like I said, it was my golden ticket to life.
But did you see it that way at the time? Or
I did.
Looking back on it and seeing
No. I mean, the minute I left, now this is no lie. The minute I left, I did. I packed up my belongings. I said, thank you very much for your time, 12 years in this particular company. And I walked out in the parking lot, turned back around, and it was just as if I had a rebirth. And I went to see a friend of mine right after that, and I'm laughing and giggling with her. I'm like, I just got fired. And she's like, excuse me?
It's laid off, I think, is a better term.
That's okay. I was fired. I mean, I'm not afraid to say it.
Downsized.
Downsized. All the other corporate lingo.
Downsized.
I've been trying to decorporatize myself for a few years. But and I did. And she's like, why are you so happy about losing? Because, you know, I was a global vice president and traveled the world.
You're doing the do.
And she's like, and now you have nothing? She's like, you're going back, right? I said, never.
And she's never back.
Well, because I think it was leading up to that point that I was really kind of fighting with the idea that I did want to do other things. I did want to try things for myself. I always considered myself an entrepreneur. I always knew what entrepreneurship was. My dad was one, a few of my brothers and sisters. And I was very entrepreneurial in corporate, which meant I created jobs and I fired myself from jobs. Because I always went looking for the newest business problem in order for me to kind of keep myself challenged. And I get bored easily.
Yeah.
And so that's what I did a lot was I said, there's a business problem that no one's taking care of over here. And at the same time, it was motivation for me because I was very greedy, very power driven, very egotistical at the time as well. And so I was looking for any opportunity to break that glass ceiling and be the first woman ever to do it and all those lovely other mindsets that people tend to have at times in life. So and that's what I did. And it worked really well for me until it just started to wreak havoc on my life in all areas of it.
So this may be an obvious question, but what's the difference? What's the biggest difference between now and then?
Oh, geez. Wow.
I think it's the wardrobe.
Well, that's true. That's true.
A little more casual. You're allowed to relax a little bit, right?
Allowed to relax a little bit. You have full control over what it is that you do each and every morning you get up. Now, that said, the flip side of that is you have full responsibility and accountability for everything that might occur in the day. And you eating and drinking water. Yeah. So... you know, there's a give and take, but I'll tell you what, I really found my true passion, calling, you know, those things that people look for all their life, of really what makes them happy. That the minute I left that office, I knew I was going to find that because I had already started. My book is, if I can say it on the air, is Shedding the Corporate Bitch.
Did we get a promotional fee for that?
She
was worried about
logo's not on.
I thought she was worried about advertising. No. I'm sorry. What is it called?
It's Shedding the Corporate Bitch.
Okay. Wow.
And it really was. It was as if I shedded all that angst and attitude and aggression that I had to have, or I felt that I had to have as a woman in male-dominated businesses who was very ambitious to begin with since I was five. And so I took on very deliberately this persona in my 20s and said, you know what? If I'm nasty and aggressive and bullying and whatnot, I'm going to be as successful as all the other people doing the same thing.
Right.
And so that day, so you ask what's different, that day I became me again. I didn't have to play the office politics. I didn't have to impress anybody anymore. I didn't have to be anything that I wasn't. I was just now me. And I could work with who I want to work with and hire the people I want to hire and work with the clients I want to. I didn't have to do it by someone else's
criteria. What are you doing with your time now? Are you helping other people make this same kind of transition, or you're in a totally different business? What do you do with your time now?
Well, the actual book that I was writing has now turned into about 55 plus titles.
Oh my!
Because now it's really around helping people identify, discover, shed, create, and accelerate their successes in life. And so it's helping them identify what are the negative angst attitudes or mindsets that they have that are preventing them from being that powerful, confident person to pursue their goals and their dreams, whether that's personally or professionally. So I spend my day right now finding authors to write those stories because they bring them to me. So we license the brand to do that. But we do have training programs and services to personal and professional development and coaching to help them identify what their issues are, work through what are the blocks that they have, and then give them the tools and the skill sets and the talents that they need to now find themselves. Because I am not the same person. Had you, you know, walked past me in a street about 3 years ago, you would never have wanted to approach me in any way, shape, or form. I was just nasty. And I had a lot of walls up and barriers up, and there's no way in the world I'd be, you know, so gregarious and outgoing, you know, in the corporate environment. I was more polished and formal and wanting to impress.
Now, do you find, are many of your clients or people you work with, are they women primarily?
Yes and no. They are women from who I can help directly. They are men who are calling me and telling me that they need help because they have some women on their team or on their board who have all the skill sets and talents and whatnot to excel, but they're not because they have this nasty demeanor to them. Yeah. So my passion right now is to help individuals, both corporately and, or I should say business-wise, because entrepreneurial women have some of the same issues. But also personally, to say, come on, just be yourself. You know, whether that's goofy like I, am, and that's casual, or that's kind of just light and airy, or if it's kind of formal and conservative, who cares?
Right,
but
right.
Just do it on your terms, not on anybody else's.
And you feel that will work. Even in corporate America, a woman coming from that area, being their self, can still allow them to rise to the level that they want to get to?
Yes, and then I'll, with a disclaimer that there's obviously some cultural situations and challenges that they have to be aware of. You know, or not even challenges. I don't even want to say that because I loved corporate. Don't get me wrong. I was very good at it. I loved it. It paid me very well in all kinds of respects. But at the same time, I admitted, and this book was very cathartic to discover a lot of things that I wasn't ever paying attention to, but that I didn't really leverage it properly. You know, there's a way to working with men. There's a way of working with the corporate infrastructure, the politics, the boardroom. And if you can understand it, and especially women, if they can hone in on that and really understand the difference between men and women, the way they communicate, the way they negotiate, the way they collaborate with each other, you know, they have to stop blaming the boardroom and, you know, men are just trying to hold us down and all that. I mean, get over it. It's not. It's not. Now,
it's not all that.
No, it's not all that. Does it exist? Maybe. And yes, it does exist. I mean, there are cliques and there are cultural, you know, in corporate cultural situations. However, women have proven that they can also, once they have adjusted and tuned into that, they can work it. And then their skills and talents and natural personality support their growth and their successes. But them fighting it and them blaming it and them taking on a persona like I did of a bitch just to kind of think that they're going to get the respect that it takes for people to want to follow them and then be successful. Trust me, I was the example of the fact that it'll bite you at some point.
So let's give a freebie to our listeners. If somebody's hitting that glass ceiling and they don't know why they can't get to that next level, what should they do?
First thing they should do is, because they're not going to look at themselves. Like, I would never have told you throughout that time that I was a bitch. I wouldn't have admitted that. I would have smacked you first, and then I would have said, you know, it's you, not me. So they're not going to necessarily be totally cognizant. So what I would have them do, and hopefully they've done it long before the glass ceiling. So, you know, I even want to help young college into, you know, the new generations going into corporate or entrepreneurship. the fact that they really need to build a mentorship and a group of people around them, but personally and professionally, that they trust completely to boldly ask them, so what do you think? How am I doing? You know, do you have any suggestions? You know, are there, this is an issue or a challenge that came up in the workplace, and this is how I handled it. Was that right or that wrong? And so hopefully they're doing it long before they hit that glass ceiling. But if they are hitting roadblocks, they need to take a hard look at themselves. And they need to do an assessment of themselves around what is it that's causing it. Because it's not, now, are there office politics and favorites and all that stuff? Sure. But then, you know what? Go ask questions. Go challenge it. But do it from a professional, mature, you know, logical place, not an emotional, dramatic, you know, oh, it's all about me place. So they should just go and ask. So how am I doing? What am I doing? Do a 360. Go and put a survey together or get the formal 360. Distribute it to peers, managers, and subordinates, and ask them, what do you think about me? How am I doing? What you know, what's areas of improvement? What's areas of successes? And then be open to hearing whatever it is that they say. Because they'll tell you.
If you ask, they'll tell you.
Yeah, yeah.
When do you find that people get to that point, like, that they start walling themselves off to criticism or to suggestions, and they stop asking? They kind of feel like, I should know what I need to do. So if I ask somebody, I'll feel like I'm weak.
Right.
When does that happen?
Oh, geez. Well, it can happen various times. And unfortunately, it happens early. I mean, think about it. A lot of people, you know, I had to admit this as well. People who are bitches or nasty or are aggressive or bullying or all those negative things that are out there, they have insecurities, inferiority complexes, and something they need to deal with personally. And so they really need to work on their confidence. Because, you know, to answer your question, it starts happening when they start getting rejected. Because none of us like rejection, right?
Right.
Whether it's personally or professionally.
Sure.
So if they're going after a job, they don't get it. If they're going after a special project, they don't get it. If they hear negativity in their performance review, or even from their clients, have an issue with them. They voice, you know, their voice an issue with them. All of a sudden, those walls start going up. Right, naturally, those walls start going up, and then the next thing you know, that wall is now a 6 foot tall wall that they can't penetrate, and it's hard to knock it down until they have something totally, you know, that's going to slap them in the face or in the gut, and it's going to come crashing down, like in my situation.
Right.
So I would say that they just need to recognize it, and we all fail. We all get rejected at some point. We all have our missteps. We all screw up really bad and not so bad. And if we don't, then we're never going to be successful if we don't do those things.
Let's take a second and talk about the other side of the coin,
mm-hmm.
which is, you are the executive.
Yep.
You are the CEO and COO and CIO, and you're the top head person, and you're trying to encourage a type of environment that has people grow and develop and move forward. What can you do to help foster that kind of an environment?
Well, it has to trickle down to everyone. And therefore, you have the values that you instill in the organization, whether you're an organization of five or, you know, 5,000, it starts from the top, right? But then it has to trickle down, then it has to come back up. So the practices have to be followed. And if they're not followed, they need to be addressed at any level. And then you have to instill those values, whether it's through training or through communications or through collaborations or through the way you hire, the way you, you know, promote, the way you educate. In all aspects of the business, that has to resonate clearly, that this is an open, collaborative, transparent environment that motivates or that proposes, you know, motivation and support and optimism and all those good values. For instance, Tony Hesch, who heads up Zappos.
Yep.
I heard of him, yeah.
Yeah, and his whole business philosophy is happiness. That's their core business philosophy. Is we're not in the shoe business or the internet business. We're in the happy business, the happiness business. And, you know, and everything that they do from the minute an employee walks in the front door hired to the minute they leave, is everything is about making the environment happy and the customer happy and the fellow employee happy and your interaction with them happy. And it, you know, some people thought that he was a whack job. Seriously, they did. And I had an opportunity to meet him a couple months back. But and yet people are banging at the door to work in that company because people want that. People don't want to have to get up and just, you know, get a paycheck. They want to be in a supportive environment. So I to close it out, it would just be to emulate it in everyone, especially your management team. Make mm-hmm. sure it's emulated all the way down and up.
Great. Good stuff.
Yeah, well, what she's saying is ringing so true for me. Of course, I'm practically perfect in every way now.
Well, you are. But since I've met you, exactly. Not an error.
But, you know, like 7th grade, I'm 4'0". I walked around with this great big huge chip on my shoulder about being short. And it was really important to me that no one around me thought that I was scared of them because I was smaller than them. And so I wonder if a lot of these same dynamics, if they don't manifest themselves with people that are short or overweight or they're a minority and perceive themselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, I bet it's not just women. Am I reading that right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're working on titles, everything from the male bitch to politics and golf. A gentleman brought me golf. I'm like, what about golf? And they're like, we have to play, you know, we're kind of pressured to have to learn how to play golf if we want to work with our clients. Yeah. And yet I suck at golf. And then I have to get out there and deal with the politics on the golf course, and I'm not good at that either. And he's like, I got great stories for you. You know, so it manifests in every aspect and every one of us.
So. Good stuff. So last question.
Yes.
We always like to ask our guests about their experiences and passing on that mm-hmm. experience to other individuals. And we call it their pearl of wisdom. If you had a pearl of wisdom to offer out to our listeners, what would it be?
I would really have to say to be you. And if you don't know who that is, then really take time to do it. I mean, I took a year to really dig in deep and figure out who am I really? Because I knew I was that 5-year-old girl. I just forgot who she was.
Yeah.
And so I would just say be you, because if not, then your whole life is being driven by other people. Wouldn't you want to drive it yourself?
Great. Perfect. Well, thank you very much,
Bernadette. Thank you. Thanks, guys.
Can you hang out for a little bit?
Absolutely.
And listen from Ryan and Bill a little bit?
Absolutely.
Good.
Thanks.
So, Ryan Curry, how are you, sir?
Doing excellent. How are you?
I'm great. You've been waiting there patiently.
Well, it's a tough act to follow.
Right?
I wouldn't want to follow her.
I know, right? Ball of Fire. I think that's the name of her company. So, Ryan, tell us a little bit about you and your business.
Well, for starters, I grew up in Boston, where I learned to drive in the snow.
That congratulations. Last Good week. Job. Yeah.
but went to Georgia Tech, came down to Atlanta, and never really left. Worked in the general contracting industry for several years and then transitioned over into the development world and have been doing development brokerage work ever since.
So you came down here. You're one of those northerners that never left, right? Isn't it the Yankee and a damn Yankee?
Right.
Yeah.
Right? I'm one of those damn Yankees also. Unfortunately, I guess I can't throw stones.
Yeah. But
my kids, I guess, will at least be able to be the
I didn't learn until I was like 25, 30 years old that damn Yankee was two words.
Yeah. Well, so, Ryan, you're a damn Yankee.
I am a damn Yankee.
Congratulations.
So I lost the accent a little bit, though, because I discovered real quick that no one could understand what I was saying.
Yeah.
So
you had to slow everything down.
Add some R's back in.
That's right. So tell us about your firm. Tell us about your business.
Well, Ben Rainey and I partnered up about 2 years ago. We have a brokerage and development firm called Rainey Real Estate. We both formerly worked together at another company and focused mostly on brokerage at this time, but moving into the development world has that gained some new life.
So what exactly is brokerage for those of us that may know a little, for somebody like John that may not know what you're talking about?
Okay, well, sorry about that. Well, we do primarily tenant representation and real estate transactions. So if you were a tenant out seeking new space or seeking to renew, you would contract with us and we would be there as your advisor and negotiate on your behalf.
Nice. So you're very firmly, you're in the
commercial
real estate world.
Yeah.
You're not selling houses, you're not broken
strictly,
out. Okay.
Strictly commercial.
And how's the business been? I mean, obviously there's a lot of space down where I am in perimeter. There seems to be a lot of space available. Is it a good time right now to be looking to find a lease?
Well, if you're a tenant, it's a terrific time.
Okay.
from the landlord perspective, it's not as great.
They're not loving life so much. Yeah. So what kind of good deals are out there right now if you're talking about trying to find space? 3 years, 5 years?
You got a Groupon or anything?
Well, we were talking about Groupon last week.
You know, it all depends what size you are. You know, and you know what niche you fall in as far as rent wise and what space you're looking for. But there's a lot of opportunity. Again, it's all the negotiating is on the. It benefits the tenant right now.
So how do I know if I'm looking at space? How do I know if it makes sense for me to go work with someone like you or just go do it on my own? What kind of questions should I be asking myself, and what kind of questions should I be asking someone like you if I'm picking between you and broker B?
Well, you know, for starters, when you're thinking of doing it on your own, you know, the first thing you have to realize is
I don't know what the hell I'm doing.
Well, one, you probably don't know what you're doing, but two, I mean, how familiar are you with the market? You know, you're talking about someone who's an expert in the market who deals with it every day versus having a vague familiarity because, you know, you might read some literature.
I read Atlanta Business Chronicle every Monday.
And suddenly become an expert on everything. But the truth be told, where the real benefit is in the long term. It's when you say as a tenant, you sign the lease yourself, 2-3 years down the road, suddenly you develop a problem. Well, that was never something that was addressed in the initial lease negotiations, and now you have an issue. So, you know, we're here to mitigate that risk.
And what have you found is the part of this business that you like the most? I mean, why have you stayed in it? What is it that you enjoy about it?
You know, really, it's getting up every day, and it's the daily hunt. You know, it's you eat what you kill. So it's. You know, previously I'd been at larger firms where it's, you know, what you get is what comes down the ladder. And
you like getting up and going out and selling new business.
Yeah, I mean, getting up.
You want a job at Business Radio X? Let's talk after the show.
It's that aspect of self-determination.
So how do you, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
How do you do your marketing? I'm fascinated at how, because it seems to me like it would be a very competitive arena.
Oh, it's definitely a competitive arena. But, you know, it's all networking. It's all meeting people, building relationships, you know, strengthening those relationships.
And what makes Rainey different? I mean, why would somebody come to you guys versus one of the bigger fish in the sea?
Well, and we definitely compete against the bigger fish in the sea. I think the big difference is, you know, when you call us up, you're talking directly to a principal. You know, it's not something that goes down through a big hierarchy of people. You are dealing directly with the principal.
That's the man right there across the table from you, John. He is
the
man.
One. The one.
So what are some of the major mistakes you see tenants, prospective tenants, or actually I'd be interested in both sides of the table. What are some of the major mistakes you see both the people that are leasing the property and the tenants making in these negotiations when they don't have the benefit of some genuine professional expert counsel like yours? I bet you see some of the same things over and over, don't you?
Well, it could be a number of things. It's all over the place.
So share an example with us, if you would, like someone you worked with, or you walked into a situation, you said, I cannot believe this yahoo did this.
I don't want to get into particulars.
I can give you
hold the names.
I can give you a good one.
Alan's chiming in over there.
Talk to us about this one. He can help me. So I don't know if you've ever heard of Charlie Roberts. He's Roberts.
Oh, we're naming Roberts. Names now.
Is the Northeast. He's one of the big developers. So I said to Charlie, I knew him. I said, Charlie, he had an acre and a half over on Jones Bridge in Alpharetta. I said, Charlie, I want to build a car wash. I said, can you, you know, rent me your lot? He says, Alan, you're not building a car wash on my land. I don't know if you've ever, so how do you deal with these guys? He had an attitude, and he's one of the ones, he won't cut his rent. He says, no, I'm not cutting my rent. How do you deal with him?
Well, I mean, you know, part of it is just looking at and explaining what the market's at and where everything's positioned right now, and you know, you have to conform to that.
This guy's holding everything.
Otherwise, you're just gonna lose the deal. I mean, from a land perspective, there's no shortage of land in Atlanta.
Right.
Really, there's really plenty right now, and everything's on the buyer's side. Everything's in the tenant's favor right now.
Is definitely.
Right. But I mean, that goes up and down, right, and back and forth.
Yeah, I mean, right now there's definitely an oversupply,
right?
Know, whether it's in office or industrial.
So, do you work both sides of the desk? Do you?
No, help? we strictly work on the tenant rep side.
Okay, so you're riding high right now.
See, I should have called him.
When do you think the commercial side of the development might restart again? I mean, there's one building going up across from us, but I think Cox is putting it up on their own. When do you think the development's going to restart?
You know, and that's something that's truly user-driven. And I think from what we see here on out for the next year or so is all going to be user-driven. You know, if you've got a tenant that can occupy a substantial portion of the building, maybe you can get a building to go. But there's definitely no spec buildings going on until the capital markets approve.
Oh, is that right?
What's the average occupancy in an A-space building in Atlanta right now?
It depends which submarket, but I mean you're probably talking in the 70%. I mean it's probably 72-73%.
Wow, so there's lots of room for Bernadettes and the other business owners to kind of get the spaces going before they really need to start making new buildings.
Correct.
Yeah. Now I know that just knowing a little bit more about you that you're pretty heavy into this whole St. Paddy's Day deal. You're a pure Irish guy, eh?
True. I was actually asked about a year ago to be the COO of the Atlanta St. Patrick's Day Parade.
The big parade that's downtown.
Downtown. It's actually the seventh largest in the country. Not many people in Atlanta know that.
Really?
Wow.
So I spend a good chunk of time working on that as well. It's, you know, every year getting sponsorships together is a difficult task.
So if there's any corporate sponsors out there that have a soft spot in their heart for the Irish?
That's right.
Ryan Curry.
All money is green.
Well, I want to hear more about this whole, the way you go to market, the your approach to networking. I'd be interested to know if this activity in supporting causes and helping and investing time like this, I mean, are you finding that that's helpful for your business?
You know, that's just something that comes by nature. I mean, I think, you know, you get to reach out and help out a community, especially like when you're in the real estate world,
mm-hmm.
you know, you have to believe in the community that you're trying to sell to people.
That makes sense.
So you want to be involved in community events and you know, further that environment.
Well, let me tell you why I'm asking about the networking thing. One of the reasons that I gravitate so much to the radio thing is people come to you, you get to sit down, you ask them questions, you get to know them. You know, the three of you guys get to meet each other today. It's all very natural. When I go to a networking meeting, as outspoken as I am, I can have fun. And if I see John there, we're going to have a good time. But I get to see John anyway. And I mean, how do you do the whole cocktail party networking thing? Hi, I'm Stone. I'm with Business Radio X. What do you do? Would you buy something from me? You know, walk us through how you approach that stuff.
Well, I think the hardest part is, you know, sometimes you go to a networking function, and you see someone you get along with, and then you start talking to them, and you realize you have to cut it off at some point because you can always follow up and have lunch with them again.
Yeah. Right.
But, you know, it's how many touches you can get around that room, how many different people you can meet.
So what do you say to, I mean, how do you even, like if you saw me across the room, how would you even, how do you determine that I'm somebody you want to talk to? And if so, what do you say to me? That whole thing is so foreign to me.
It just, you know, it just kind of happens. You know, I mean, part of
he's Irish. I mean, it's in his blood.
But conversation is two ways too, and you can pretty much immediately tell when you go over and start talking to someone that they don't really want to have a conversation, or they do want to have a conversation.
Maybe they're a vice president of a great big professional services firm, and they're a BITCH or something like that. They're not going to be fun to talk to anyway, right?
Could be true.
No, say more though. I honestly, because it sounds to me like this is a major part of your strategy. But
you have to realize this, you know, you're not going to win them all. You're not going to walk into a room and there's going to be 100 people there, and you're going to meet 100 people, and you know, every one of them is going to become a client. You know, it's finding, you know, 5 or 6 good people, and, you know, after that you follow up with them, and then you know, maybe out of those 5 or 6, you get one client out of it.
And so, do you? When you say follow up, do you do like the whole "let's meet at Starbucks"?
Breakfast,
you probably
lunches,
have a real office.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's 2 breakfasts, you know.
Right.
But that's, you know.
So pretty substantial time investment.
That's part of the deal. Yeah. Oh, it's definitely a substantial time investment. You know, and it's also making sure you're at the right networking function.
Right.
So,
how do you find the right networking function if you're somebody out there and trying to develop a business? How do they know where to go, or how do you find the different functions that are going to be effective or helpful?
You know, some of it's just word of mouth. You know, you talk to people and they say, "Hey, look, I was at this function and I thought it was terrific. You know, you should go to one of these." I also find that it's helpful to pair up with people that aren't in your industry. So I'll pair up with, you know, friends that I went to graduate school that work in financial services or insurance, you know, and we'll go and they kind of play the wingman.
I'm writing this down.
And we take that approach.
Will you be my wingman, John?
Just a call.
We're obviously not in competition, but we complement each other well.
And so John's walking through the room and saying, man, you got to meet this Stone guy, man. He's awesome.
Man. Oh, definitely. Myth, a legend.
Yeah.
You know, and if there's two of you sitting over there and you're having a good conversation and suddenly people go, well, I want to go talk to those guys.
Right.
They look like they're having fun.
There you go. Networking 102. That's not even right. 101 stuff. That's advanced. 201, maybe.
The wingman strategy. The wingman. I like it.
You think it was good in college. Wait till you get to networking. You need to write a book.
I know a publisher now.
Yeah, so. Exactly. You see?
That's right. That's right. As someone who's written and authored and signature. Will you sign? Will you sign books, Bernadette?
Oh.
Yeah, she signs. That's good. So what do you see as challenges coming up in 2011 in your business and kind of into the future? What do you see for your line of business right now?
Well, I mean, I think we'll have the same challenges that we've had, you know, in the past 2 years, which is, you know, we've got some buildings that obviously have some problems with their capital structures. And what ability they can have to make deals. I think some of the deal velocity has slowed down because I think some of the big tenants that were out there have taken advantage of a weak market and have you know, done their deal. You know, but there will be some that'll come along. I think you know, High Points, we'll see, you know, maybe one or two potential buildings go up in the next 2 years. You know, but you can't go any further beyond that. You know, no one has a crystal ball.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I've always thought about is, as a business owner myself, I have, you know, I don't know how much square footage we have in our office complex, but I've always wondered the whole buying versus renting thing, right? And I don't want the headaches of the whole rent, the whole buying, and then I got to rent out to other people and be the landlord. I don't want to do that. But are there... Or do you see there being potential for, like, A-space businesses actually selling out floors or maybe certain spaces that you now own that space as kind of a partial owner of the building? Is that just impossible, or does that exist?
I mean, it exists. You can be tenants in common. But the truth of the matter is, you know, you have to ask yourself, what business line are you in? Are you in the financial services business, or are you in the real estate business?
Right.
You know, so why do you really want to own something? You know, in fact, in some cycles, you see people actually doing sale leasebacks where they're trying to get out of the buildings that they own.
Yeah, well, that's what I was saying. Is I don't personally want to be. That's not where I'm going to make money. But I'd certainly rather own something than rent it if it's going to be what I'm going to use. Right? I don't want to be a landlord. I'd just rather would have my space like I would buy or rent a house. Right? So, are there opportunities in the A space where they can buy just what they need and then go about their business?
I mean, yeah, there's opportunities for things like that.
You think it's going to become more available as this kind of downturn?
No, I mean, I just don't see businesses wanting to tie up capital like that.
Mm.
You know, I mean, you know, theoretically, yeah, it would seem better to buy than to rent.
Right.
But the truth of the matter is you're tying up that capital that you can be deployed at your core business activities.
Mm-hmm.
So what about this trend to doing more and more business virtually? Do you see even medium and fairly large-sized firms not needing as much space as they used to because they're working more virtually? Has that had any impact at all in this arena?
Well, it's had more of an impact over the last – technology has had more of an impact in reducing the amount of support staff that's required.
And so that translates into less space needed too, right?
And that has translated into less space in some areas. But I don't know if you'll truly go to a virtual world where people, you know, imagine that you're going to be sitting at home, you know, on your computer and,
right,
you know, having teleconference with someone.
But does that let you in the negotiating process say, well, I'd really like to have that extra 5,000 square foot, but, you know, if you can't give me a good price on it, then I'm going to just run that aspect of my business virtually? I mean, does it put you in a position to have that, or am I just being crazy?
It's not that easy.
You haven't seen that. You haven't seen that yet?
No.
Yeah. That might be coming, but... Well, that's good stuff. So, Ryan, the same question that I talked to Bernadette about. If you were talking to the audience that we have at large here and giving them a pearl of wisdom, something that you would say, look, this is something that's done well by me in business, what would you say to them?
You know, I think the biggest thing I've learned in business is not to take it all on yourself. You know, there are always experts out there in certain fields, and the key is finding the right expert. You know, that's how you succeed in business, is by knowing who to call on that can be a resource.
Good. Perfect. Well, we appreciate the time, Ryan, and we'll hope to have you on again maybe later on this year and check on the corporate space and see how things are going.
Excellent.
Well, it'd be fun if you bring a tenant with you, maybe, like a satisfied tenant. No, and we talk through the whole process. That might be a cool show. Would you be up for that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, fun like stuff. Did you learn anything in that segment?
Oh, yeah. Well,
it was all brand new to me.
I got a lease coming up, so I may have to talk to Ryan pretty soon.
Well, this is the closest thing I have to an office is the studio. Otherwise, I'm at Winrose Lane. You know?
Or your car.
Or the car. Yeah. Right.
So our next guest is Bill Williams, and Bill is in the franchise business. Bill, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful, and you've been very patient going through our two previous guests. I appreciate that.
Great conversations. Yeah.
Yeah, good stuff. So tell us a little bit about your background.
I'm I was kind of like Bernadette, a longtime corporate guy, and went through a couple of the ups and downs. And finally, at the last one, I said, I've had enough. I want to walk away. I don't know what I want to do, but I want to do something on my own. And that was 10 years ago, and I've managed to keep a roof over the head and obviously well-fed. unfortunately.
See, now he's not insecure at all. He's very secure.
So out of that journey, if you will, I found a passion. I know there's more people like me that are harboring a desire to have a business of their own, and they're afraid to take the leap. So, you know, that's my passion, is to help those folks, you know, find a business, find their way out.
Give them a little nudge over the cliff,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely, yeah. Provide education, information, and coach them along the way.
So tell us a little bit about your business. How does it work?
Well, we're both business and franchise brokers. So when let's say a buyer comes to us and says, I'm looking for something, don't know what I want, we go through a very extensive process, interview, question, trying to really clear up what they want to accomplish, what they want owning a business to do for them. Is it balance of lifestyle? Is it harmony? Is it create more income, retirement, more time with the kids? You know, what's really driving it? And then determine what their skills are, and work through a process of matching their skills to a business. We really try to get people to come into it with an open mind, look long range, and keep an open mind about any business.
Do you find that a lot of the folks that are coming to you don't really have a very in-depth frame of reference for what franchising is really all about? I know, in my mind, franchising is you either buy a Jiffy Lube or a McDonald's, although I do have a cousin's neighbor's best friend who runs a Subway. But do you find that most of the folks that you're initially talking to really don't know too much about the franchise world?
No, there's a great deal of misinformation out there about it. I think that one of the things I talk about in my seminars is that franchise does not equal French fries. people think fast food, or they think about Jiffy Lube. But there's so many different businesses out there that people are just not aware of, and it's really a matter of what's a good fit for the individual. Back to their lifestyle, their skill set, what they're trying to accomplish, and to match them up. You know, whether that's a vehicle wrap business, a dental repair business, a massage spa. You know, it all depends on what they're really what's a good fit for them.
Now, you say you do small businesses as well. So somebody comes in, they're a blank sheet to you, and they come in, and you think, you know, franchise is not going to be right for you. I think we should be looking for an existing business or maybe something like that to buy.
Right.
How do you know? What are the triggers that lead you to somebody who's not really franchise material?
Well, one of the triggers is cash flow. One of the greatest advantages to buying an existing business is there's immediate cash flow. With a franchise, it's usually a startup, and so there's going to be a period of time before you can actually put some money in your pocket. But it's also the nature of the individual. You know, I mean, they may be better suited to picking up a business that's already there and established and is kind of stagnated. They've got some energy. They've got some marketing pizzazz. You know, come in and re-energize that business and take it to another level. The ability to invest is also a factor, because in today's market, we're looking at to buy an existing business, 30, 40, 50, 60% as a down payment. So, you know, the ability to invest up front might be a determining factor on which way to steer them.
You know, this is something that I always find fascinating, and I have clients come to me all the time that are going through a transition,
yep,
and they're looking for that,
yep,
next thing. And franchise and business ownership always comes up, and cash flow always comes up too.
Sure.
So if we're sitting down with somebody and they're looking at wanting to get into a business, they want to get into that independence, they want to be able to get up like you get up and feel like you have the control of doing what you want to be able to do.
Yep.
And they want to buy into a cash flow. What's typically their return on their investment from a cash flow perspective? I mean, how much do I need to put in to buy into a business that's going to give me that cash flow that you talked about before?
Wow, that's...
I know you might not have a perfect number, but a range. I mean, do I have to have $10 million to come to the table with this thing, or
okay,
do I need $500,000 to get me $50,000?
Okay, good. On a franchise side, you know, we like to tell people, look, you should have at least $50,000 in liquid assets, a net worth of a minimum of $300,000, and the ability to pay your bills for 12 months.
Okay.
Now, the more money you have, the more choices you have. You know,
right.
So to come into an existing business, you probably are going to want to be able to invest $100,000 to maybe $200,000 of cash, and then there should be an immediate cash flow. What that is depends on the business, depends on how leveraged you are, et cetera.
So there's no, you haven't seen any kind of a typical average. If you're putting in $500,000, you might expect $20,000 or $30,000 of income. It could be more. Could be a lot less.
Franchise side. You can invest a little and make a lot. You can invest a lot and make a little. You know, on an existing business, you're able to do the forensics on the accounting records and see what the cash flow actually is. So you know you're going to know in advance what to expect.
So are there
there's no general rule, though.
Are there some cold, hard, just great locks that are definitely hot right now or always do well that you know about? Or
no. Okay. There is no guarantee in anything. Just like corporate employment, there's no guarantee that job will be there tomorrow. There's no guarantee that you can be a success. But that's a great question, and I hear it a lot, is, people come to me, you know, and they, what's the hot franchise?
Yeah,
want. I want to get rich quick. And, the answer is, I don't care. I don't know. I don't care. Yeah, there's some hot sellers out there, but if it's not a good fit for the individual, then they shouldn't go there. You know,
that really is a much bigger piece of it than I guess I was anticipating. And you know, you're a nice enough guy, but why don't I just call Jiffy Lube Direct? Why fool with you?
Well, you can call Jiffy Lube Direct, but the advantage to coming to someone like me is that maybe Jiffy Lube is not the right fit for you. All right, and so I'm going to work at it and say, okay, let's go back to square zero here and see exactly what, you know, what you're capable of doing, what you're really good at, what your background is all about. And, you know, maybe Jiffy Lube is a good fit, maybe it isn't, you know, and let's go find another business for you.
Because if you have to be there every day, that would not
That's
be
right.
a good fit for me.
Right. And it's really about what are you trying to create long term.
Now, it's interesting. In the last probably 10 years, I've seen a lot more people come into that line of business, into
sure.
that franchise matching. What separates you from the rest of the pack?
Well, I think the fact that we are both business and franchise brokers, that we're going to work with the buyer to try and find the best fit for them. If the other folks out there specialize on just one side of it, that's where they're going to spend their time.
Right.
But you know, we're working on the buyer to find that best fit, that best path forward.
So you help them to identify that probably more efficiently than others that you've seen in the field.
We like to think so.
So this isn't just a conversation over a cup of coffee. You have some sort of process that you would put
right.
someone through, and you're going to probably come up with a very different set of options for somebody like me than you might for somebody that's got the money bags John Baker's got.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's two completely different leagues, right?
That's true.
But there's probably opportunity for both of us?
But there could be, but there's some overlap, absolutely, yes. You know, part of the process, it's a 9-step process, extensive. I've had one person.
See, it's a 9-step process. My instincts were right on. 9 steps.
Yeah.
It's like recovery.
I've had one guy get through the whole thing in 31 days. That's my record. You
know? 31 days.
31 days. And he signed the contract. But most people are going to take 45, 60, and even longer to go through and evaluate what they really want to do.
Yeah. And how do you get compensated in this whole thing? I mean, is this something that's coming out of the guys, the guy or the girl's pocket? How do you get paid?
Now, I'm a broker. You know, some people in this business call themselves consultants. I'm a broker. I get paid by the seller when the deal gets done. So I do consult, I coach, you know, and a little bit of recruiting as well in the process. But I get paid by the seller, and because franchising is such a tightly controlled industry, Federal Trade Commission, you know, rules are, you know, it costs this much. You know in advance what you're going to pay, what the franchise fee is, and you know they really employ brokers to like you would an executive recruiter. To go out and, you know, every franchise has a profile that they're looking for. So they rely on brokers to go out and recruit those people, if you will, to fit that profile. And then they compensate them, again, just like a recruiter would be. And because it's tightly controlled, it's part of the marketing cost of the business. So it does not cost the individual more. Like Stone said, walk in the front door, Jiffy Lube, you know, he's going to pay the same franchise fee and royalty as he would if he came through someone.
And
like
they probably just assume me work with you because if I've worked with you, it's not naive optimism. It's an educated degree of optimism and maybe some of that naivete?
Naivete.
Maybe some of that has gone away and you're bringing
that?
Them
a... Spelling
no
that.
No idea. But no, you're bringing them a better qualified potential franchisee.
Yeah, they rely on me to bring them screened and qualified applicants and not, you know, candidates more properly and not just, you know, throw people, you know, against the wall. So, as Ryan said, it's a relationship business. I build relationship with the client. I build a relationship with the franchisor. So they know when I call them, I think I've got somebody. You know, her name is Bernadette, and they say, "Oh, well, let's talk to her." I've got that established.
Well, I got to ask you the same question. Now it's going to be a non-issue. Now you've been on Biz Rocket Radio. The phone's going to ring off the hook. But
yeah,
up
sure.
till now. How did you go to market? Did you do the Ryan networking thing?
Yes.
Is it so? You do a lot of networking.
Do a lot of networking.
Talk to us about that experience.
Well, you asked earlier, you know, how do you evaluate? And you have to go out and venture forth and, you know, talk to people. Some formats are going to be good for you. Some are not. So you have to learn how to do it. You just have to make people know, make yourself known as to what you do and how you help people. I volunteer in the career ministry around town, active in that, do seminars all around. But in networking, I have a very structured approach to it. You know, identify, you know, who are going to be good referral sources and coach them up on my business and so that they recognize a potential prospect, you know, when they come across them. So, you know, I go into it with not a wingman, so to speak, but a plan.
Maybe you and Ryan could hook up.
I was thinking that while he was talking.
That's,
you know?
That's actually not a bad little connection. That you're a franchise.
Like
you need space, right? So there you go.
Yeah. I mean, yesterday we did a joint seminar. I had one of the speakers was a recruiter and a career coach. One was a financial planner. One was a professional referral networking coach. In my part. So, you know, we all did a 15-20 minute presentation to people who are looking to, you know, make a change for their future.
Good stuff.
Yeah, I learned a lot about networking today.
Yeah, networking was the theme.
Yeah.
Wasn't it? Started off with Bernadette and ended up with
We
Bill.
Should have like a networking show or a networking round table like once every 5 or 6 weeks.
You've got way too many ideas. Are you writing these things down? Because they just go poof, and they go into just the air.
That's about how long they last.
Wadawi. We just want to get to Wadawi. Get to the lake and do our and then we can have
That's the idea we're going to focus on, the Wadawi remote, the boat remote.
Boat remote.
We're going to do the logo together and everything for the boat remote.
Well, Bill, that was great. Appreciate talking to you. And again, as I've asked the two previous guests, pearl of wisdom, if you had something to share with our listeners that was something that you would advise or kind of help them out with, what would it be?
Well, my grandfather always told me never to fry bacon in the nude, so you know, that might be one.
That's good advice.
On a business wise, you know, I think in just life
experience,
and
I don't know if Grandpa had a bit of an issue.
I didn't ask.
Didn't
he was an old cowboy, so
That might answer that.
But don't ever give up. Just keep moving forward. You know, I'm a corporate refugee. Bernadette is, you know, life changes, and there's always something over the horizon. So just keep moving forward because you never know, you know, what's going to happen.
All right. Well, wise counsel. We appreciate it. To all our guests, we appreciate your time. And to our listeners, we appreciate you tuning in. And until next week, have a productive, safe, and hopefully snow-free 7 days.
John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA. SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. We'll be right back.